get your sheet out. Everybody probably done forgot about that sheet. Probably done threw it in the garbage can. So if you have your sheet, we're going to go over it. This is kind of a review over this last section we went through. Isaiah 40, 30 through 31. Though youths grow what? What? What did I hear? Faint? Faint? Okay. And what? Weary. Okay, I'll go with that. It could be weary and tired, you know. Okay, so, and vigorous young men do what? Stumble badly. Yet those who wait for the, who? The Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. Okay. Pretty simple, just go through, and with a good verse to keep in mind on how things will actually go. 1 Kings 19, after Mount Carmel, Elijah was what? Afraid. Yeah, he was afraid. You think his knees knocked? You think he shook? Was he that afraid, you think? Anybody want to speculate? It'd be all speculation. I don't think he probably showed that outward fear. It was just internal. High stress all of a sudden, looking over his shoulder constantly because Jezebel had said she was going to kill him within the next day. And so I think it was more of that aspect. Elijah did what? He doubted his ability to do what? He doubted his ability to keep going. He thought he lost all of his strength. Elijah was tired, exhausted. I mean, he was exhausted. Elijah felt, yep, he was frustrated, and what else? And alone. At least he thought he was alone, okay? When Elijah arrived at Mount Horeb, his zeal was rekindled. 1 Kings 19:9, spend time in what? Spend time. Yeah, go in your closet. Remember those verses? Okay, and pray. You spend time alone with who? The Lord, with God. Okay. Speak honestly about your. Speak honestly about your issues, feelings. You know what's really on your mind. You know, don't sugarcoat things with the Lord. You know, He's there to help us. 1 Kings 19, 11 through 13. See God. You're going to see God how? Doing what? Silence. No. I'm saying silence with the group. That's right. And part of that is working in His ways. You know, God works in His ways and in His time. And that's what we get so frustrated with praying. We pray for something that we feel like we need and need to happen tomorrow. And it doesn't happen. And it doesn't happen for a week or 2 weeks. And then you keep praying and it still doesn't happen. And what do we do as humans? Lose our patience. We're now not patient with the Lord because we want everything right now. And we have to be so careful of that. So God is going to work in His ways and with His time. 1 Kings 19, 15 through 16. Good is what? What is it talking about? That's right. Something else to do. Go set out for the next act of service of whatever it is. It may be something totally in a different direction that you never thought about, you know. 1 Kings 19, 17 through 18. Remember I could go with that. That's not what I was thinking. See, this is over in 19, 17, and 18, so. Remember ye or what? Don't be like Elijah. Don't feel like you're just all by yourself. You are not alone. We're not alone. And that's something I think everybody falls into that at some point in time. We've got a lot going on in our life. I'm going to say tragedy comes up in the family or with a friend, and all of a sudden you kind of freeze, and you just forget. You know, the Lord's there waiting to hear our prayers, and we're not alone, okay? We may feel like we are, but we're not alone, type of situation. So, okay, we got to always keep those type of thoughts in our minds. Basketballs are made to bounce. But only when full of air. When grandkids come over, they got to dig out the basketball out of the garage so they can find it. They find it. Last time Mika was the one wanting the basketball. And she gets that basketball and going to bounce and you go plop. There was no air. It did not bounce. So then it was Papa. Air this up, Papa. You know, it just stayed at me. So yeah, I found my little needle thing and aired it up. And then it was the opposite. Boy, that thing bounced. Papa, this bounced better than those at school. You know, I must have put too much air in it, but I'm just glad it didn't bounce one time and pop. I'd really be in trouble with her. But likewise, Christians capable of bouncing back from ordinary difficulties sometimes just plop. They don't have the bounce to come back. They get so upset, whatever, they just don't have their bounce anymore. And we need to always be aware of that. Some hardships can leave you feeling completely deflated. And I hope each and every one in here has somebody they can turn to and talk with when you're so deflated to try to build you up. That may be your spouse, okay? I understand that. But it may be somebody else, you know, type situation. You may have a spouse that sleeps all the time, like Nate. I'm peeking at her on her night shift stuff. But you know, you got to have somebody that you can turn and talk about deep things when you're really, really in trouble and your mind's in trouble. You're not alone. God's there, but you need to have you can call it a prayer buddy or whatever, but you need to have somebody out there. And I think most of you do. You know, so I know Clint got one. His dad sitting behind him. So am I not correct? Yeah, okay. There's some things that I observe in that situation on that. And I probably could go around the room and But that's what we need. That is what I'm not picking at you. That is what we need. I'm complimenting you, okay? Yes, sir. It will vary. I don't know if there's an absolute answer. I just walked in a while ago with Ed and I said, heard anything? He said, no. And I told him about Martha Ferguson. But we'll go a week maybe. Sometimes if we go a couple weeks and things are real quiet, we get nervous, okay? Because we're afraid that something's brewing that everybody else knows about, but we don't, and that happens sometimes. So it kind of varies, Andre. I've never thought about it. We don't keep a count or anything, you know. And sometimes it's, you know, calls. I may go and get 3 or 4 calls in a day from different things happening, you know, going on. It's not so much that they're in a dire need for something, but something's come up. And then, like I say, I may go a week or two, you know. Get to the point I've done figured out nobody loves me anymore, you know. But that's okay. Everything's calm and great. That's the way we want to have it, okay? So somebody did something, and my voice did just dropped an octave or something back there. Somebody's playing with the switches, and nobody wants to stick their head around so I can see who it is. Okay. I just touched on Christians struggle with how to pray, especially to pray openly about their feelings while still showing God the proper respect. So, any questions? What we've been over on this burnout. And I spent a little extra time on this, mainly because I still don't know if personally I truly understand a burnout type thing, because you're just supposed to always keep it going. You know, that's the way I've always looked at things. And if you didn't keep going, you was in trouble with Dad. That's one thing which Margie knows. My dad, he gets up in his 80s, and he could still do more than I could. But he leaned on me to do the heavy stuff, you know, like pick up the post and dig the hole deeper and all that. But other than gardening, you know, I'd go up and check on him back when he was living, and Mom had already passed. We let him stay at the farm. He was gardening. He probably had 2 acres, maybe 2.5. And I go up there, and the first thing he'll tell me, did you bring that box? Which was a stimulator thing that brought up the work on his shoulders. His shoulders were just totally gone. And it's, oh, my shoulders have been bothering me. Before you do anything, let's go out. I'm going to show you a garden. And we go out there and go look in the garden, and I get looking. I said, Dad, I see more tomatoes out here that I didn't see last week, you know? And I said, how many more tomatoes did you plant? Oh, about 300. Well, no wonder your shoulders and your back's killing you, you know? But he was just one of those guys that just kept going. And it just amazed me and worked circles around me, there's no doubt, type situation. But a lot of you met my dad. He came to church a few times with us. He was a little guy, 140 pounds. If he got to be 150 pounds, he did not eat supper at night anymore. I mean, that was it until he got back down to about 140. I mean, he was very disciplined. That was an army discipline, World War II. Had him so disciplined. Most people cannot be that disciplined type situation, but work, work, work. He always had something. He went from one job in the garden to another one. He always had something to do, and loved doing it, and which was great. So, and that's why we need to be as zealous Christians for the Lord, always looking for something to do, to help, whatever way you can, okay? I'm going to rant for a second. Y'all know I ramble around sometimes before I crank in this other lesson, I got going here. Let me find it. Discovered Roley and Elaine Levins. Their daughter and son-in-law used to live next door to them. They no longer live next door to them. They have moved to, where did I say, Margie? Nacogdoches, Lufkin, someplace up 59. Okay, they have moved up there, and the granddaughter. And Roley and Elaine are out there at that house by themselves. Roley is still struggling a lot. He still has an open wound on the back of his calf where home health comes in two times a week to change the bandages and all that. He's hoping he can get it and keep it where it is to where they're going to do a graft in about a month here or somewhere is coming up. But remember them in your prayers. Call them. Call Elaine's number. Roley's number is crazy. Can't figure it out. Do what? Right now, I do not know that, Cheryl. Probably not, because I don't think Roley's able to, and Elaine's never mowed, to my knowledge. I don't know. I just found out Saturday is when I... Well, I don't know, but I know they have moved, okay? And so we need to keep them really on our prayers and check on them and so forth, okay? Elaine's better right now, so she's taking care of him and stuff around the house. But when I talked to him, when was that? Monday, maybe, when I talked to him. Well, he was having to cut me off short, thank goodness. I was prepared for an hour, so it was only 15 minutes. I pick on him about that, but he got a lot of stories. But anyhow, because he was going to have to, he does the driving. He was going to have to drive Elaine to the grocery store. They had to go get groceries, okay? So anyhow, so there's things like that. If somebody can... possibly help her, you know, get a grocery list and go get groceries to help her, and you know, things like that. But I'm just one of those things. I don't know why all of a sudden that flashed in my mind, because it just bothered me, type thing. Okay, so we're gonna move away from the good old burnout stuff, and we're gonna talk about how you can change your corner in this world. You ever thought about that? We all have a little corner. I mean, we are just a mere little ant on this planet. We think we have a lot of people here in the United States, and you visit some of these other foreign countries, and you realize, where did all these people come from? Okay? We're just like a little ant. We all have our little niche, our little corner, okay, in this here US of A. And how can we change that for the better, for the positive? So that's what we're going to talk about here over the next couple of weeks here, get started here. Matthew 5:14 through 16. And I know you've all heard this over and over, but we're going to crank off with this. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill hidden cannot be hidden. Nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Matthew 5:14 through 16. That's one of those, if you looked it up, that's one of those to put a little bracket around. I mean, there's a lot packed in that. And it's talking about each one of us. Each one of us. You is what what he's talking about. You are the light of the world. Now, are we being the light of the world? You know, are we being the light of the world? That's the key right there. Big key. Because if we're not, we need to work, and we're going to have to get somebody over there rubbing those sticks together to get that fire going again. Okay? So it's one of those factors. We have, it's like a self-examination. That whole thing there is like a self-examination there for us to look at ourselves in our little niche of the world. Acts 17:6. Paul and Silas are described as men. Let me see here. 17:6. When they did not find them, they began dragging Jason and some brothers before the city authorities, shouting, "These men who have upset the world have come here also." They're described as men who have turned the world upside down. They've upset the world as they know it. And the that's a big thing. Who has upset the world right now that y'all know of? Patty is grinning. She knows the answer, Patty. I'm just thinking, walked out, was listening to Fox News. Who has upset the world right now? Trump. Trump has upset the United States. He's upset the world. Okay? Think about that. One man has upset the world. Got some really upset, some real happy, some waiting to see in a year or two that all this stuff's going to pan out. All this. Who else has upset the world? Elon, maybe to a certain degree here. I'm thinking about worldwide. I'm thinking about Putin. When he invaded Ukraine, he really upset the world, created all kind of havoc in the European stuff, but also here. Okay? So who's somebody else that's upset the world? Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely correct. He's the ultimate one because he's the one influence all these others to upset the world many times. Hamas upturned things. Okay, the Houthis. I'm not saying it correctly. Group that's attacking the ships going through the Suez Canal down there. I mean, they're upsetting the world. I mean, I cannot pronounce that, but anyhow, but they're. They keep attacking those ships, trying to shut everything down. And it's just sad on that. But let's turn this around. Turn this around. Think about it. Us, we as Christians right here in Baytown, Texas, going here to the east side, we can turn the world around in our little corner by having an influence, by having an influence on those that you're around, encouraging them. Invite them to come to church with you. Just different things. We can all have that influence. Just as much as any of these other world leader type people that have a big influence. But we're talking about an influence for Christ. Okay, is what I'm talking about. If you have a light, does anyone light a lamp and put it under a bushel? You're going to put it under a bushel, you're going to hide your lamp, you can't see. And we've all been in a dark room. I mean, just, you know, dark as it can be. No light. Go down those caves sometimes. They turn all the lights off in the cave. And they light one candle. And it's shocking how that one candle can light up stuff to where you, once your eyes can adjust, you can kind of see your way around, you know. It's amazing how much one candle light can do. So each one of us has a candle, okay? We are a candle. So therefore, we will have an influence. But when we put all of our candles together, it gets brighter. And that's what we have to work at always as a Christian in a church family, to always try to be as bright as we can for each other. Does that make any sense? I'm talking about things we all know. I understand that. But just trying to think about it. The Jews of Thessalonica intended this description as an insult. But for zealous Christians, it is a rallying cry to change the world. That's what Christians have been doing for a long time now, for centuries. We have stood. Christians are still here, even though there have been times that were bleak. Others are trying to kill all the Christians. But we have stood firm all these years. So the Lord is helping us on that. That's one of those things we may not think he's helping, but he's helping. You know, we talk about providence of God. There's a lot of things happening under the realm of providence of God. That's the Holy Spirit's out there really working that we don't quite understand. And sometimes a little bit later, a year or two, 5 years later, you look back and think, whoa, that must have been providence of God, because this happened and this happened. And you start realizing these certain things in your life lined up to be where you're at now. And thank goodness you found the Lord. Okay? I can look back for myself. The path I was going was not going to be a good path, most likely, growing up on a big farm like I did. So it's just one of those factors. Certain things happen. And the best is sitting back there in the back. So we got to keep all those things into a perspective. Every zealous Christian will impact the world in some manner. Some people's influence exceeds others, but the truth is you are already influencing those around you for better or for worse. You must resolve to change your corner of the world for the better. You know what, right now? I'm not peeking on him. Big Charles back here, I keep calling him Big Charles, he's already having an influence on his two sisters. There's no doubt. His little light's already shining. He has an influence on everyone in here when he puts that smile on and that charm. You already tell he's going to be a charmer. But you understand what I'm getting at? We all can have that influence. And I walked in a while ago with a big surprise and saw him walking some. So it won't be long. He's going to be a busy guy. We all can have that influence. We all got to let our light shine. God's message cannot be locked away in your heart. It burns within, demanding action. Jeremiah 20:9. Like Jeremiah, you must not bottle up the zeal God ignites. You must use it to magnify and glorify his holy name. I mean, it's just an absolute. We just got to keep working at it. Keep working at it. You're going to have those days. It's going to be kind of in the valley. Then you're going to have those days that's on up here on the top of the hill, the mountain. So we just got to keep working at it. Each day is a day in itself. That's the reason why he tells us, you know, don't think about tomorrow and tomorrow. We're going to do that anyhow. We're still going to plan. Talked to somebody the other day, and they say, oh, I've been putting it off, but I'm going to go down to the funeral home and get everything paid off so for when I die, my kids don't have to do anything and so forth, which is very commendable. And And I said, are you having problems? When they started telling me that, I'm thinking, they're not telling me the whole truth about their health here. Now, oh, no. I just got something's been itching on me. I just got to do. I said, okay, well, you need to check that off your list and get it done then, you know. So, but we all have to have a zeal for something going out there. This person has a zeal to get that done right now in their life. But you have to use that zeal to magnify and glorify His holy name. God is holy. God is great. God is good. And He is there to help us all. You know, I've been going through different, talking about different ones. We're going to venture off and talk about Nehemiah some. Nehemiah did not set out to become popular or to solve every problem faced by the Jews. He devoted himself to a specific task, determined to solve a specific problem. Likewise, you need to consider which problems touch your heart as deeply as the broken walls touch Nehemiah. Ever thought about that? Anybody ever thought about sitting down and make a list? Okay. What problems touch your heart as deeply as the broken walls touch Nehemiah? I'm going to pick on my mother-in-law. A lot of you knew her. Every once in a while, 11 o'clock at night, get a phone call. Oh, she's upset about something. I was usually the one to go over and talk to her. And one of the things, and I know she caught on to me, but one of the things we always did was sit at the kitchen table, get a piece of paper out, and asked her to write down what is good, because all I was hearing was negative, you know. And she sat down, and after she got about 10 things written, she always, well, you know, I'm starting to feel better. She didn't want to do her homework assignment in front of me, I think that's what it was. But what my whole point about that is, we have to be careful. If we get ourselves in that rut, and our little corner's gotten even smaller because we just don't think anything's going right in our life, okay? And we're not glorifying God the way we should. Write down the good things. Sit down and make you a list. And it makes you think. And all of a sudden you realize things are not as bad as something I've been beat myself up about. Okay? It's a simple little solution. And by the way, that probably cost me several $100 in a class to learn that. Okay? I haven't really heard that in a Bible class. So some things I throw out are things that I haven't really heard before, and I'm going to throw them out. Simple little thing to do. There's a guy named Howard Thurman, pretty good while back. He was into civil rights, and he was a minister and so forth, but he wrote different things. One of his sayings was, don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive, and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who come alive. Now, I'm going to add on to that, come alive for the Lord, okay? He was in referencing other things going on in the world, but coming alive for the Lord, really think about that. Yeah, that's. But again, sometimes during those low valleys, you know, we kind of, everything's out of the mind. Yep. You know, a big modern day example is all the different charity works. A lot of people bury themselves in certain charities. Today at Rotary, y'all gonna get tired here in Rotary. It just happens on Wednesday we do Rotary meeting, and I'm teaching class right now, so I'm always observing. One of our ladies from Rotary went down to Guerra. Rotary has a big clinic down there, and they do eyes, they do some dental work, type stuff, denture work, for just the totally destitute people down there. And this trip, she said they did over 800 patients in 5 days while they were there, okay? And they'll have teams that fly in and stay there, and they work. They have doctors that come in, but the doctors need people to try to find these people's name, you know, and all those types of things. But anyhow, she was talking about that, and just thinking about it, I may not be able to talk about it, is having a lady, because they're up in the mountains in that area, region, people who live in the mountains, they develop cataracts a lot faster in their age. And of course, none of them have sunglasses to protect their eyes too. But she said, as usual, they had a couple there where they did cataract surgeries on them. They were completely blind. The cataracts were so bad. They had them so long. And understand, these people will have to try to travel sometimes a week or two, and will be waiting and already camped out in lines for them when all these people come, the doctors come into this clinic. But they do the cataract surgery. And she said they take the bandages off their eyes, and it's the first time some of them in 15 years have seen their children. They had babies and had tried to raise them being blind and never seen them, and now all of a sudden have sight. And she said every time, everybody in the clinic cries, because it's such a touching thing. Now for this lady, I know she'll go every year as long as she's physically, you know, mentally able to go, because that is a passion that she's seen helping others, okay? So sometimes it doesn't actually have to be church-wise, but it's still a passion helping other people and the influence that they can have on those people in that part of the world. My time is up. Thank y'all. And we'll talk about Nehemiah more next time. And you probably wouldn't hurt if you just go ahead and take Nehemiah and start reading the first chapter and read down probably about the first four or five chapters for me. So you'd be a little more prepared.